Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer, Rohan Nadkarni. Ro, how are you doing today, my man?
Well, Michael, if I'm being honest, as I mentioned in our little pre-show chit-chat, I am feeling a little extra emotional after the weekend, not only because of, you know, another fascinating slate of NBA games, but as I mentioned to you, I watched the To All the Boys I've Loved Netflix trilogy this weekend. And if you want to feel like a young South Asian immigrant again, I highly recommend watching these movies. They were really moving.
I have never dabbled in those waters.
Okay. Okay. You're not a teen rom-com guy.
I'm a mid-90s rom-com
okay.
guy.
I think I you'll like this. It's a throwback to a different era.
Okay, that's wonderful. We'll save the deeper conversation on our other podcast.
Where we that'll down. Be for the off-season subscriber special, for sure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So look out for that. But Ron, you know, it's Monday morning. We have a lot to get to on today's show after a particularly spicy weekend around the NBA. First, I want to thank our listeners across the globe for once again sending us incredible emails. Please keep them coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. Send us questions about the playoffs, about, you know, the head coach hirings, any rumors you're seeing, any great thoughts that you have about just what's unfolding in the NBA. Always appreciated. You guys are great. In this episode, we're going to squeeze everything we can out of the disgruntled Damian Lillard news that popped up over the weekend with some fake trades. I know everyone loves those, along with some head coaching news and Dennis Lindsay, the architect of the top-ranked Utah Jazz, who I guess, it was worded as he took on an advisory role. He is basically stepping down, or I don't really know the behind the scenes look there, but he is no longer the head lead decision maker in that front office. So we'll take a look at what that means for the Jazz. But first, as I'm sure you all remember in last week's episode, we had a fake draft, Rohan and I, and I took Chris Middleton with my second pick. And based on last night alone, just the remarkable performance that Chris Middleton had, I think it's official that my team would pulverize your team, Rohan. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, no, because I have the perimeter defenders to slow your team down, as we mentioned. And I think what we've really seen, I have the gutty team, you know, Devin Booker out there playing with a broken nose, still finding a way to get it done. Mikal Bridges.
Is he? Is Devin Booker finding a way to get it done, or is he getting shut down by Patrick Beverley?
Hey, listen, I like to measure success by wins and losses, not points, okay. Michael. I don't know.
Fair.
I don't know how you like to measure things. Also, let's just, you know, this is the same Chris Middleton who was shooting really poorly in that game 7 against the Nets and got bailed out by Kevin Durant's half-size too big shoe. Is that the same Chris Middleton we're talking about? You know, I'm sorry. I realize that I've been saying you know way too much on this podcast. Please don't go back and listen to any old episodes because it's going to drive you crazy. But let's not overreact to one game, Michael. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, well, he's an Olympian, and he's a multiple-time All-Star, so shout out okay. to Chris Middleton.
Olympian.
yes, iconic. Rohan, so, I mean, we'll start with that. You know, we're recording this a day after Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals. A lot happened in that game. Some weird stuff. Trae Young steps on one of the officials' foot. His steps feet? On an official's foot. Feet? Yeah, I was like struggling to figure out what
the correct... That was a tough one. That was a tough one.
Yeah, but anyway, Trae Young twisted his ankle. He's having an MRI today. The Atlanta Hawks, as we're recording this, are awaiting the results of it, so we don't know exactly if he's going to be held out going forward. But just what was your reaction to everything that kind of went down in Game 3 of that series and kind of where it pitches us going forward?
That was the first time all postseason the Hawks lost a game I really thought they were going to win. It felt like the first time they seemed like a young team, I thought. You know, even that blowout in Game 2, like blowouts happen in the playoffs weirdly more often than people, I think, remember. That was the first time it really felt like the Hawks were a young team. You know, they race out to that big lead in the first half and kind of aren't able to maintain it. At the same time, I think they had a great chance to win that game, obviously, if Trae doesn't get hurt. I didn't love how long Nate McMillan kept John Collins out of the game after he picked up that fourth foul. I know it's easier said than done. In hindsight's 2020, John Collins is playing, you know, four or five power forward or center for these guys. He's going to have to guard Giannis. He's at greater risk of picking up that fifth foul than most people. He was out for when he came back in the game, I literally was like, oh yeah, John Collins is on this team. That's how long he was out for. And then obviously Trae stepping on the official's foot, just such a freak occurrence. What are you going to do about that? He didn't look right to me in the fourth quarter. I mean, he's playing off the ball way more than he normally does. It felt like there was some... He had a couple plays where he was taking it to the rim looking for a shot, but the aggression just didn't feel there. Especially in the series where I think, in general, he's been tentative to go at Giannis on offense when he gets that switch. Especially on the ankle, it didn't look like he was aggressive and kind of trying to attack the Bucks defense. And beyond that, I think, like everyone, we've been really critical of Mike Budenholzer, an eyebrow raised with some of his decisions. The fact that he closed without Brook Lopez, I think Brook Lopez played only 24, 25 minutes. It's not that he's been bad, but Bud committing to going small and beyond that, really tightening his rotation in this series, I think is a positive sign for the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, I like how you bring up the switching and how that did a really good job. I mean, obviously, Trae was hampered with the ankle and, you know, he did not look like he normally does. I mean, he hit that like sidestep three in the fourth after he came back on. But then there was another play a couple possessions later where he caught a kick out. And he passed it to Gallo instead of shooting, which I jotted down in my notes. That was very bizarre. That's not like him. So I think that the Bucks, you're right. They bench Brook Lopez, who, you know, I think he's played pretty well in this series, all things considered. But they clearly love going small, switching everything, 1 through 5. And they had some success with that, I think. I mean, I can't recall ever seeing the Bucks switch as much in the Mike Budenholzer era as they did in Game 3. And they had a lot of success with it. I mean, there were some possessions where, you know, John Collins or Gallo were punishing Drew Holiday or P.J. Tucker or Pat Connaughton on the block. But I think that those possessions are generally wins for a defense. You know, you bog down the Atlanta Hawks offense and get them playing ISO ball with guys who aren't Trae Young. That's just a win for you over the course of 48 minutes. So I think we'll see a lot more of that going forward. But I also agree with what you were saying about how, like, I thought the Hawks were going to win the game.
Yeah.
And so, Chris Middleton, all jokes aside, was just like an absolute flamethrower superstar. That's just a game that you have to. He went absolutely berserk, could not miss. And you can't, the thing is, like, you can't just double Chris Middleton because, like Giannis is on the team, and usually Giannis is setting a ball screen for him and rolling to the basket. So when he has it going like that, they are very, very difficult to stop. So that's just one that you just got to take that L if you're the
Hawks. For sure. And I also think if the Hawks do have a weakness right now, I don't think they have a stud wing defender that they can even throw on Middleton in that scenario that doesn't compromise them some way. I mean, you're not going to really put Solomon Hill on the floor as your quote-unquote defensive stopper in big fourth quarter minutes when he's not going to shoot the ball. They're really missing DeAndre Hunter right now, even if Cam Reddish could give them something, but they don't have a – it's not that – I think Herter and Bogdanovich have acquitted themselves pretty well on that end of the floor during the postseason, but they're not guys – they're not a Drew Holiday type where you say, I need you to keep the ball out of this guy's hands for a possession. I need you to shut this guy down for a possession. They don't have that guy, and I think that really hurt them last night. They just didn't have anyone who could get Middleton out of his rhythm in the slightest.
Yeah, and also it was very interesting to me that, you know, you brought up John Collins and the foul trouble, and I think he only played 23 minutes. They obviously need John Collins to play huge for them if they want to win this series, and he can't get in foul trouble. But Clint Capela did not play a second in the fourth quarter. And I was jotting down in my notes as I was watching the game, like, where is Clint Capela? Like, Onyeka Okongwu, who last night looked like he's going to win five defensive player of the year awards.
He had a few good moments. He had a few good moments, huh?
Very exciting. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm just like, where is Clint Capela? Where is Clint Capela? Where is Clint? And he did not get in late in the game. So that's another interesting wrinkle to kind of keep our eyes on. He was plus 11 in the game, too, Clint was. So that's an interesting decision there. But it goes back to Milwaukee switching everything and Milwaukee going small in the fourth. And I think that that kind of forces Nate McMillan's hand a little bit, needing as many offensive threats as you can have on the court in crunch time. Any other thoughts on this game, this series, Rohan? Do you feel good about the Hawks still?
I would be shocked if Trae Young didn't play in game four. Uh-huh. Just because he seems like the kind of guy who's going to try to gut this out no matter what. I'm pretty bummed if this ends up being a... Obviously, there's been so many injuries. We don't need to talk about what the injuries have done to this playoffs, but... I just hope Trae Young's able to go and able to play like he's been playing, because I think this series really had the potential to go to the distance if Trae were healthy. So we'll see what happens with that. I think these teams are evenly matched is maybe not the right phrase for it, but the matchups in the series are very interesting. And I'm impressed that the Hawks were right there in that fourth quarter, all things considered. And it took a pretty superhuman Middleton performance for the Bucks to pull away, even when they did go small, even with all the problems they presented Atlanta. I thought the Hawks were right there, and you get a great Middleton game plus a Young injury on the same night. For them to hang around as well as they did, I just remain super impressed with Atlanta and how they handle adversity.
Yeah, agree. This series is very fun. I'm looking forward to the rest of it unfolding. Okay, so next, our next bit of news. Dennis Lindsay, last night it came out that the president of basketball operations, whatever his specific title was for so many years in Utah, he is now an advisor to ownership and not responsible for the day-to-day decisions, personnel decisions that are made by that organization.
How do I get a job where I'm not responsible, but I can just tell people what to do? That sounds lovely.
It is great. I think you kind of have that role here, if I'm being honest. But,
oh, okay, cool.
You just didn't know it.
I see.
But yeah, but this news comes after obviously a very disappointing end to the season for the Jazz. And I guess, I'm interested to see what it means for them personnel-wise, how aggressive they are going to be potentially shaking things up. Your boy, Dwayne Wade, is now over there, and I'm sure he's got his voice in ownership's ear as he is a member of the ownership group. I think the point blank question is, like, is Rudy Gobert going to get moved?
I would be shocked if this is a precursor to him getting moved this summer or this season. Mm-hmm. I do think when you have a new owner come in, typically they want to start bringing in some of their own people, right? I think the Jazz have obviously been successful for years, so I don't think that Ryan Smith, is that his name, the tech guy? It's Ryan something. Let's so our buddy Ryan.
We do research here.
Yeah, we do. We do
open flow. Yes.
Well, I just for me, Dwayne Wade is the owner of the Jazz. Yeah, there we go. For me, Dwayne Wade's the owner of the Jazz. So, you know, this Ryan guy, whatever. But the point is, I think that owners like to bring in their own people. I think we see that time and time again. And I don't think that the Jazz are going to rock the boat because of one postseason exit in what was a weird season. I think that they can still tinker around the margins and have a very successful team. So I don't look at this as a precursor to Gobert being moved, only that, you know, they have a new ownership group and they probably want to bring in some of their own people.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be seismic, obviously, if you move Rudy. He is really your identity on both ends of the floor and your most important player. He just won Defensive Player of the Year. I think he just turned 29 like yesterday. His birthday was over the weekend, according to my Instagram scrolling.
Okay.
So, you know, he's getting up there. He obviously just signed the contract. I don't know what his trade value would
getting
be,
up
honestly.
There. Getting up there. I'm turning 29 this year, man. What are you saying?
You're not an NBA player, my man. You know, you're not in your prime yet.
Okay,
he is,
I appreciate
he
that.
He is in the prime, potentially teetering out of the prime pretty soon. Also on a humongous contract. Obviously limited offensively, can't create his own shot. That's not great. And as we saw in game six of the semifinals, you know, Terrence Mann just like totally went off and Rudy was a little bit helpless there. So, yeah, I don't know if – I'm just kind of speculating with this question here because I know that Dennis Lindsay really valued Rudy Gobert and his development and what he meant to the team. And so all of a sudden I think that the likelihood of a move goes up when the guy who drafted him, the guy who oversaw his development and all of his progress is now no longer making the calls. So that's – take for that what you will. Any more thoughts about Dennis Lindsay, Rohan, before we move on?
Only that I would be really surprised if the Jazz make a huge move to the roster for at least another year. I think that they are going to try to build off the success. They were the number one seed, and I think they'll try to build a more versatile team that still includes Rudy. But I do think new owners like to put their stamp on the situation more often than not. So if they have another exit before the conference finals, then I think it's time to start thinking big moves.
I agree. And we should say that Mike Conley is eligible for a new contract. That is a humongous question mark for the organization as we head into the offseason. Very, very interesting to track in Utah. Okay, so Rohan, I put in our outline here Dame trades, and before we kind of hop in with all of our hypotheticals, we should just kind of lay out the situation in Portland very quickly. There was a report by Yahoo's Chris Haynes that Damian Lillard is – I'm going to probably like butcher this description just because it was a little confusing to me personally.
It felt – purposefully confusing.
Vague?
Yeah, vague.
Yeah, so, I mean, Dame, for basketball reasons alone, it's understandable, I think, that Damian Lillard at this point in his career would like to win a championship and like to play with other superstar caliber players. So from that perspective, I don't blame him, even after signing a Supermax, to stay in Portland and all the things he said about loyalty. I don't think anyone should blame him for wanting to do what's best with him as his career sort of evolves.
And he's given his all to the Blazers. He's never been the kind of guy who felt like he had an eye out the door or whatever. I mean, he's truly, truly given it his all, to this team and to his teammates. Yeah.
He had one of the greatest games, in NBA history.
I mean, I think we should just call this report what it is. It felt like a precursor to Dame trying to ask out at some point. I think it's no secret to anyone who follows the sport closely that Lillard has a relationship with Chris Haynes. That's not to say that Dame is the quote-unquote source for this story, but I think Haynes is plugged in with what Damian Lillard wants, even if he hasn't made a decision yet. And I think that you hit the nail on the head. For basketball reasons, it's very clear why he may want out. And I think the report coming out that Lillard is, I guess the report framed it as he's upset with the way fans have reacted to his level of involvement in the Billups hire, which Lillard says he didn't have a high level of involvement. There are reports that saying he had ownership's ear. Regardless, whether or not he's upset at a few fans or a lot of fans on social media who are coming after him, it all to me just feels like this is kind of what you say publicly when you realize for basketball reasons you might be trying to get out of here.
Right. And for even more context, we should say that Chauncey Billups was hired, given a 5-year contract over the weekend to become the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers after they interviewed Mike D'Antoni, after they interviewed Becky Hammon, the assistant in the with the San Antonio Spurs. And I'll just speak frankly. I did not know about the sexual assault allegation that occurred in 1997 with Chauncey Billups before this weekend. So I personally was not aware of it. And I think that that is what has overshadowed Chauncey's hire to a degree with that coming out. Chauncey Billups obviously has been around for quite a bit. Right now, as we speak, he is an assistant coach for the Los Angeles Clippers. He worked for ESPN for years. He had a well-decorated NBA career as a player. And he has interviewed for head coaching positions and spoken about wanting to be a GM for years. So that comes out right now. And that certainly muddies things a great deal. And I think that, you know, I don't think that Dame, as you said at the top, I don't think Dame should be blamed at all for wanting Chauncey to be his coach, particularly. I think Damian Lillard tweeted that he was unaware of those allegations also when he made his claim that he wanted Jason Kidd or Chauncey Billups to be the next head coach. But I guess, Ro, just like what are your feelings about the Portland Trailblazers still hiring Chauncey, who we should say denied sexually assaulting the woman who brought a lawsuit against him and Ron Mercer and Antoine Walker back in 1997, and has said that the relationship was consensual. We should just throw that out there also. So just what are your feelings about this hire, given everything that has gone on and kind of materialized and come to the fore over the weekend?
So this is obviously a pretty heavy situation, and I know that people don't typically listen to NBA podcasts for, you know, long conversations about the issues in our society. Mm-hmm. I understand why people are upset, and I don't think it's just women who should be upset, right? Something that happens in this scenario is people are like, well, how are women fans going to feel? This isn't, you know, a burden that only needs to be carried by a certain group of people. And like you, I had no idea this existed about Chauncey Billups, and that in and of itself is a problem, right? Because these things get glossed over. He's been someone who's been respected in the league for so long, been on TV, on ESPN. Like you mentioned, Clippers assistant coach was rumored to become the Cavs president for a hot second there. It never came up during those times. And what does that say of us? What does that say of the role of people like you and me in the media who maybe aren't bringing those things up, that aren't putting these jobs for him in the proper context? So it's complicated. On a personal level, like I would like to believe that Chauncey Billups is the kind of person who could have redeemed himself and done what he can to kind of right these wrongs. Well, this is obviously a very, very serious wrong, and I think we're all kind of figuring this out in real time. And can I say for sure that he should have this job? I don't know. I really don't know. And for people who are like, this is unfair, this is crazy, this is obvious that he shouldn't be the head coach of this team, I don't know. I can't argue against them. How can I say that that's a wrong opinion? I think it's obviously just a larger problem that we have, where people who are involved in these situations of sexual assault, sexual misconduct, so often are very quickly accepted back into what they're doing because sports is largely run by men, right? So it's easy to look over what Chauncey did for people in power, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating, and especially when the Blazers came out and looked like they were doing this really wide search, and maybe they were going to hire Don Staley, maybe they're going to hire Becky Hammon, and to kind of do the quote-unquote opposite in terms of public perception, it's really disappointing, and I can't say I'm ecstatic about the hire, or because obviously we don't know, and I don't want to sit here and say in a definitive manner, I think, you know, Chauncey Billups did XYZ, but it's just disheartening to say the very, very least.
Yeah, I think that's really well put. It's obviously a thorny situation. You know, you get into these conversations about redemption, second chances, and I think that's an interesting angle just because there was never any consequences.
For sure.
He's been in the public life for this long, and I am from Boston. I was, 9 years old in 1997, something like that, 8 years old. So I don't remember if that was in the news then. I doubt it was, frankly, to a large degree, because the world in 1997 is not the world in 2021. But for him to not acknowledge, or this not to be in the discourse since until now, really is doubly frustrating for a variety of reasons, and does no one any good. And so right now it's overshadowing him becoming a head coach, a black man in the NBA, with all of the intricate complexities that happen with diversity hires, and we can't celebrate that aspect of it. So it's very troubling, and it's just a bummer, I think.
I will say that I hope he and the organization do address it in some way. Again, I don't know what the right thing for him to say is, and you know, we're focusing so much on him and not the purpose person who said that he did these things to them. It's tough, man. It's really tough. And I think that this situation, if anything, should open up a much bigger conversation about, like you said, no consequences. The fact that he got this far in his career in the first place with no one ever bringing this up, I think speaks not only to his lack of consequences, but the collective failure of the media and so many other people to just basically ignore this. And it's frustrating. Like you said, there's so many layers to this. In so many other situations, someone like him getting this position would be great for the league in so many ways. At the same time, how many former players are there who are good leaders or who are great players that were never involved in a situation like this? I hope that they do address it, and I think they owe it to their fans. They owe it to people like you and me, concerned citizens, to address this in some manner, in some way.
Right. Just real quick before we move on, I think it speaks to the even beyond the Chauncey Billups case individually, it speaks to the culture of the NBA when someone like this gets hired. And I think that's the important thing to point out, because there are players in the league who have been accused of similar things who are still lionized to this day. And there's a list of them. Honestly, you can go look it up. So that's disturbing. So it speaks more broadly to just what's happening around the league and how we still have so far to come as a media conglomerate, who's covering the league, who's able to speak out against this stuff, and who gets hired into positions of power. So
one more thing I'll add on to that. I hope the league office, I don't know when our next availability with Adam Silver is. Maybe it'll be at the finals. If I'm there, I plan on asking about it, but I think the league also, if they want to position themselves as champions of social justice and all these initiatives, position themselves as quote-unquote progressive, position themselves as a place where women are treated as equals, I think that they also have to address this issue. And I hope Adam Silver is put on the spot at some point.
Right. And there's really, honestly, I agree with that. There's really, honestly, no way to segue from this conversation yeah. to fake trades involving Damian Lillard, but we're going to do our best right now. So, Rohan, I asked you for three fake
okay,
trades.
Okay, can I give you mine? Can I give you mine three in a row? Can I give you mine three in a row?
Wow. Sure, if you want to do it like that. I'm not going to stop you.
I kind of do, because my last one's a real wild card. And I don't know if I hate it or if it's the best idea or the dumbest idea I've ever had. So I'm going to build to that one, if you don't mind.
Sure. Before you do, I just want to read a quick email that we have from Colin B. And I probably should have read this email before we started talking. But Colin really hit the nail on the head in what we were going to discuss in today's episode. So Colin writes... hey guys, I am not sure if you're aware, but there was a Chris Haynes article posted today about Dame possibly on the brink of demanding a trade. Colin, we were aware. Thank you so much. Most of this is stemming from the recent controversial hire of Chauncey Billis. I am curious to see how much stock you put into this article, as well as the situation as a whole, and that if you foresee Dame being in another jersey. Thank you. Thank you, Colin. And so that is exactly what we were about to discuss, if we foresee Dame being in another jersey. And I mean, real quick, I do foresee that as a total possibility. This is the NBA. Anything can happen, even when you just signed a Supermax. And you're 30 years old and you're 6'2". It doesn't matter. You're a superstar. Dame Lillard is a superstar. He's one of the 10 best players in the world. No question about it. Okay, Ro. So let's go with the fake trades now. Hit me with your first one.
I think this might be my favorite one.
Okay.
So the Toronto Raptors are going to send the Blazers Fred VanVleet, Chris Boucher, the number 4 pick, and however many future firsts it takes to get it done, and they get back Damian Lillard.
Okay. I like this a lot. Can you break down for me while I process this? Can you break down why you like it for both sides?
So why I like it for Portland is I think they get to remain competitive. Van Vliet's a really good player. He's obviously not Dame, but he's a great defender. I think he's someone who can pair well with CJ McCollum. A proven playoff performer. I think he's a really good guy to have on your team. Boucher, I think, gives them insurance in case Nurkic doesn't want to come back this summer. He was being vague in his postseason press conference. He gives them a stretch look at center if they want that. The number 4 pick allows them to bring in someone young. They can bring up along Van Vliet and McCollum if they eventually do decide to tear things down. They have a potential star in the waiting there with the number 4 pick. And mm-hmm. they get a couple, you know, future firsts that, you know, it takes to get done deals done these days. Toronto, I think that this is a vintage Masai move, right? These are the kinds of home run swings he takes. I think Lillard gets them right back into the contention conversation in the East. You know, they'd have a potential lineup. You could have Siakam, Ananobi, Lillard, Gary Trent reunited with Lillard. I think that's a really good 1-4 to have in a playoff series. So I really think it could work out for both sides.
So, I mean, if you're Toronto, it's kind of a no-brainer, I would say.
Yeah.
Dame, I'm going to, when I go through, I mean, my rationale for why I think this particular rumor is so interesting is that unlike the Harden trade rumors, Dame is under contract
for 4 years.
Yeah.
It's unlike any other, any other superstar trade. I agree. The haul is going to be, I think, beyond what we can imagine. I just think that this is a not quite a star, but as close as you could get to being a star without a star in Van Vliet, a solid rotation player, a very high draft pick, and more draft picks. I think that's a pretty good haul. But maybe you don't love it, so maybe you'll like my next trade more.
I like this. I'm not ready to move on.
Okay.
I'm processing this right now. I like it a lot, actually. I think the clear... First of all, if you're Toronto, can you win the title, I think, is the question. Personally, I would say, yes, you can win the title. If Dame is your best player and you have Siakam, Ananobi, if you re-sign Gary Trent. I think if you're Portland, the number four pick is really what you want there. That's I mean, like, when you give up a superstar,
it's the rare trade that allows you to remain competitive while also rebuilding.
True, very true. So I mean, I like it a lot. Losing Fred VanVleet, basically, like, you are also losing Kyle Lowry, I would assume. He's not going to be back in the picture, and so you're losing one of the best defensive backcourts in the NBA and kind of replacing that with someone who is not known for his defense. So that's
I do think they'd have three really good defenders on the wing to help compensate between Ananobi, Trent, and Siakam if they're able to bring back Trent.
Right. And I think that, as we've seen with the Atlanta Hawks, you know, if your point guard is not the greatest defender, you can still make a deep run. If he is just so scintillating on the offensive end, as Damian Lillard obviously is. So, I mean, I like this a lot. So, one for one for you, Rohan. You're one for one. Okay.
So, this next trade then might be worse. I thought maybe you'd like it more, which is why I saved it for second.
Okay.
The Pelicans send the Blazers, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, the number 10 pick, and every pick they acquired in the Lakers and Bucks trades.
So
all the swaps.
Yes. So I had the Pelicans as one of my suitors. Okay. So I'm gonna throw you my fake one, and it was Dame and Robert Covington for Brandon Ingram, Eric Bledsoe, Jackson Hayes, and either the Lakers' first-round pick in 2024 or the Bucks' first-round pick in 2025. I don't think that if you're the Pelicans, you need to give up that much draft capital.
You probably don't, but I do think they need to send the number 10 pick no matter what.
Okay, well, so we'll throw in the number 10 pick then also. That's a good call by you. So that's a, I mean, that's, look, you get the you get the franchise building block young, very, I mean, Brandon Ingram was an all-star last year. He's a very good player. Obviously, I'm a big fan. You get him to build around, and then you have two, maybe three first-round picks that are very coveted, I think, particularly, I mean, Lakers or Bucks, honestly, in 2024, 2025, those picks are, like, kind of ridiculous.
I definitely want to have the Lakers one then. I definitely am going to want to have the Lakers one then.
That's fair. That's fair. Unprotected. And I mean, that's just, that is going to be, that's a gold brick right there. So I agree. And then in my fake kind of calculation here, I threw in Robert Covington just because if you're the Pelicans and you make a move like this, you're trying to make a deep playoff run, like, right away.
Yes. Oh, really. They need talent around Zion. There's obviously already talk about maybe he wants out. David Griffin, I think, is the kind of aggressive GM who's going to respond to something like that. I think, to your Covington point, Dame and Zion are slowing no one down, so they're going to need help.
Right, and I mean, you can close a playoff series with Hart. Hart is not in my deal here, right, but he's in yours. So you have Dame, you have Hart, you have Rocco, you have Zion, and then you have a fifth guy. I don't know exactly who that would be. But I love the Pelicans here. I just want so many nationally televised Pelicans games next season. Like, whatever we have to do to get Zion on national television even more, because he is what I miss the most right now when I think about the NBA, and not being able to watch him play for this many months has been personal torture. So we got to get the Pelicans really good. And yeah, Dame with Zion, I mean, that pick and roll is, what are you doing? You're dying is what you're doing. You're not, there's no way to guard that. So I like that one. You're two for two.
This one is the real, this is the controversial one. Okay.
Yes. Let's go.
This is the trade that's either going to make you think I'm a basketball genius, you're going to put me in Daryl Morey's front office, or you're never going to invite me back on this podcast.
Are we sending Peyton Pritchard back home straight up? Is that what it is?
We're doing Damian Lillard for Paul George straight up.
Okay, yeah. This is not crazy to me.
Okay.
I don't think it'll ever happen. So I should say that before I say that.
Nor do I.
Particularly how PG has kind of acquitted himself in the playoffs. I think he's been, he goes 12 for 18 from the free throw line in game 4. If he makes more free throws there, if he makes more free throws at the end of game 2, was it? Yeah, mm-hmm. game 2, they win both those games. That said, I think he's played excellent basketball, even though it's been inefficient. Yes. But the load he's been asked to carry without Kawhi, I'm not ever going to get on PG after what he's done. So I don't know what the appetite there is to move on from someone who is as valuable on the defensive end and obviously allows you to go small and play the lineups that the Clippers have had so much success with. Just like straight up, who's better?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think Lillard, screams out as obvious this guy's better just because of his scoring ability. But in a playoff series, I think you can make an argument for George just because of, like you said, the versatility he gives you. He can play 4 positions if you really wanted to stretch him and play center and go super small in some kind of scenario. In the last 5 minutes of a playoff game, I know it sounds crazy because of how good Lillard is as a scorer, but you can make an argument for both guys. The reason I threw this trade out is because now the real nuclear one is Kawhi for Dame that I don't think we're ready to touch. And I think I know immediately sounds insane, but you just look at Kawhi, you just look at Kawhi's injury history and you wonder. Anyway, what if the Clippers, we're always talking about they need a point guard, they need a table setter. I know Dame is obviously a score first guy and he's not like a Chris Paul, let me get everyone set up for 3 quarters and then go hunt my own shot. But the fact that he can handle the ball, I think would help the Clippers a lot. And I do think for what it's worth, he'd still give LA a lot of versatility. They've played small without Kawhi, right? So I think this would be a similar scenario. They'd still be able to play small, etc. Who's better in a vacuum? I think Damian Lillard is better. In a playoff series, it gets a little more tricky.
I'm not really even ready to say who I think is. I am. I would probably side with Dame. First of all, Dame's younger by about a year, I think. And as well as Paul George has shot the ball.
Well, we know you think people are washed when they're 28 years old. That's important.
I was literally about to just play both sides of the fence and say that when it comes to Dame, even though he's undersized, even though he's 30, about to turn 31, you look at Chris Paul, you look at Steph Curry, the contract that he's on is fair to me. It's so much money, but it's fair. I think he will live up to it. I think he will be a superstar in this league for the foreseeable future. I don't think we're going to see any major decline out of him, honestly. And if you put him next to more talent than he's ever had, I think he'll even be more efficient. So I want to play both sides, straddle both sides of the fence there, Rohan, if you'll allow me. But I can't see Paul George just like going to Portland and being like, all right,
he's a Nike here we guy. Are. Hey, he's a Nike guy. I think they'd have a really good team. I don't think they'd be a title contender, but I think they'd have a really good team.
They would be very good. And that backcourt just makes a lot more sense. They could play very interesting lineups and yeah, he gives them more size for sure. Obviously. Okay, so yeah, that was a wild hypothetical. I like it a lot. Can I now bless you with a couple that I
yes,
came up with?
Yes, please, please. I know that you told me, you texted me last night, and you were like, I have like 19 trades lined up. So I appreciate you editing it down, but I'm excited to hear what you came up with.
So I had 4, and I already told you my Pelicans one.
Okay.
So a couple of these aren't. I don't think these are that crazy, to be honest, but I think that they, I'm just like, we already said that what makes this so interesting is Dame, like, he can't hold his free agency over whoever wants to acquire him. So it kind of opens things up. On one hand, it opens things up. On the other hand, like, even if the
Cleveland Cavaliers
were like, here's all this young talent, we want Dame, I don't think that makes sense.
I don't think it's going to happen. Cavaliers. I think Portland will do right by him in a scenario in which he does ask out. They're not going to take a bad trade. They're going to get a good deal, but I think he goes to a contender.
Right. I agree. Or a team that could at least become one with his presence. So the first hypothetical I have for you is, I mean, it involves someone who we've discussed heavily on this podcast over the past week or so, and it's with the Philadelphia 76ers. And I don't think this is particularly original, but Ben Simmons, Tyus Maxey, two unprotected first round picks in this year's draft and 2023. You know, I am not the biggest Ben Simmons fan. I think that you can potentially get better young talent or more intriguing young talent too. That's cheaper. Also, that gives you a little bit of a longer runway to rebuild than Ben Simmons and the max contract that he's on. But it is very fascinating to just imagine what Simmons would look like in a different environment where he's able to play the five. He has a little bit less pressure on him. He's not encumbered to play beside a low post behemoth like Joel Embiid. And then on the flip side, Dame and Joel Embiid if you're not going to the finals, I don't know what to tell you. Then yeah, that's an unstoppable duo.
So like you said, I think a lot of people have floated that trade out. My issue with that trade is a week ago we were talking about McCollum for Simmons and why that's maybe feasible for both sides. If you're Portland, why are you now giving up Dame for him? Wouldn't you rather make the McCollum swap and see if you can convince Dame to stay? So that one, that's why I blanch at that one a little bit. Like I said, I don't think that that's you getting in the lab. I think that's one people are talking about in general. Right. I just don't see Portland going for that when Simmons's value is at an all-time low. I don't know how you... I don't think Simmons is getting moved for a top 10 player in the NBA.
Very fair. I would concur. I don't think that this one's going to happen. This next one, I love because... Well, I'll just say it. I mean, it's kind of obvious why I love it. It's with the Golden State Warriors.
Ooh.
And it's James Wiseman, Andrew Wiggins, Jordan Poole, both of Golden State's first-round picks in this year's draft, and an unprotected first in 2026. I mean, I think the number one thing that people would say when you look at Golden State as a trade partner here is that Steph and Dame can't coexist. To that I say, you're an idiot.
to that I say Dame and McCollum, you know?
to that I say that this would just be the greatest offense we've ever seen.
I also think the Nets have shown that defense is slowly going out of the window in this league. Like, if you can get... That would be the Nets West equivalent. That you make that move 100 times out of 100.
Dare I say it would be...
better? You know, better? You think it would be better?
I do think it would be better because...
Ooh! Dame, Steph, and Clay versus Kyrie, Harden, and Durant. Ooh, that's interesting. Look, I think Durant is so unfair that I understand that you can go one by one and be like, well, this guy's better. That I think Durant is so unfair that it outweighs it, but I'll let you make your argument.
I mean, the season Steph just had really kind of proves that he's also not on this planet. The season Dame just had, the performance he had in the playoffs against the Denver Nuggets, you just can't. If you watch that game live, it was a religious experience. So obviously he is still in his own stratosphere as an outside shooter.
In a vacuum, who would you rather have, Dame or Harden?
I'd probably go with Harden, not gonna lie.
Steph or Durant?
Look, okay, stop. I don't like where this
sorry,
is going.
I'm sorry.
I don't like where this is going. But
no, it would be interesting. It would be so interesting. That's just a like, really.
How do you guard him?
You don't. You pray. You literally pray. I would love that trade. I would love to see that happen. It would be thrilling, obviously. I just don't think the 7 and 14 picks are good enough to get it done. I think Wiseman can be really good in the right scenario. He was thrust, I think, into an uncomfortable position as a rookie on a team that many expected to contend. And I don't think Kerr always used him in the right ways. I just don't think picks 7 and 14 are good enough to get that trade done. I don't think Wiggins, to me, is like salary at that point. You're not making that trade for Andrew Wiggins. So you look at it as, are Wiseman, 7-14, a future first, really enough to get it done for Portland? I'd be very curious if the Blazers would make that move. To me, there's just not enough draft capital to get it done, even though Wiseman, I do think, is an underrated aspect of the trade.
And if you are Portland and you have that offer on the table, and let's say you have another offer that's comparable, sending Dame to San Francisco, the Bay Area, where he's from, Oakland, I think would just be like a wonderful,
like
a send-off? Or
it
I don't
would,
even know
but
what
do
the
you also want to send him to a conference rival that has dominated the last decade, knocked you out of the playoffs, and now is...
Yes, sure. Yeah. But if you're Portland, look, if you're Portland, your mentality after moving on from Damian Lillard is, all right, we are we're rebuilding. Yeah. So we're moving CJ. We're getting draft capital for CJ. We're moving everybody else. We're starting over around Wiseman. We're building on Wiseman. We're building around whoever we draft with these picks. That's the mentality, I think, if you're Portland, once you move on from Damian. Like, I just don't know what players... And I guess this leads me into my next fake one, which is an interesting – I'll let you tell me what you think here. So it's the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay. Hate it already. Continue.
And it is Dame for Ricky Rubio, period. No, I'm just kidding. Dame for Ricky Rubio, Malik Beasley, and Anthony Edwards. And I guess I'll sell it to you by just saying that if you're Portland, you get the piece who you can build around. Number one pick, Anthony Edwards. I personally think he's just going to be a superstar in the NBA someday. And like, that is your foundation right there. He's also the greatest on camera interview.
Yes.
Of all time in the history of cameras. So I do like that for Portland. That's something that they can immediately get excited about. They won't necessarily be competitive, but you can then move on, I think, from CJ. You can move on and you can rebuild. You could probably flip Malik Beasley. You can rebuild there around a guy who just has that pedigree and I think can carry a franchise on his shoulders over the next 5-10 years.
This is another trade that's essentially Dame for Anthony Edwards, right? Because Rubio and Beasley. I think Minnesota would need to throw in two future firsts, and those firsts have to come in after Dame's contract is over. So you'd need like a 2026 first and a 2028 first. And then I think you consider it.
Okay. So you would do it then if you got those picks?
I think so. I'm maybe not quite as high on Edwards as you are, even though I think he's really good. I just think that – I don't know that I necessarily even agree with this. I just think the way GMs do these trades right now is they don't want the sure thing. They don't want the guy who's already established to a degree. They want the hope of getting the next great guy with a draft pick, because that's easier. I think it's easier to be hopeful than to trade for a Ben Simmons and be like, we know exactly who this is. And I'm not saying they know exactly who Edwards is. I think to your point, I think he obviously can become an all-star. He's great scoring potential, etc. I just think that the way the league works now is the GMs would rather have the picks because
you can sell hope.
Yeah, it's a hope. You'd rather take the chance on the unknown than the known, I think, oftentimes in this league.
So I guess that brings me to, like, if you are – I mean, there's all these other teams that aren't contenders that we didn't really discuss. And obviously the Timberwolves are not a contender, right. But
I also want to just throw this out there. I don't think the Lakers are getting him, and I don't think the Knicks can put together a good offer. Continue.
I was hoping we did not mention either of those organizations on this podcast. So our great producer, Shelby, I hope that you cut that out. But as I was saying, like, there are organizations that are not on the level of championship contention that are interesting here from the perspective of they have a lot of draft capital, like you have, and young talent.
Oklahoma City.
I wasn't thinking about them because their runway seems like it's just never ending. But I was thinking about Orlando. Or even Detroit, honestly. I mean, you have the number one pick. Or Houston. You have all
Detroit
of these.
Detroit was an interesting one to me. And I was trying to build something around the number one pick. You send back maybe Jeremy Grant, the number one pick, some salary filler. It's interesting. Could you do something like Sadiq Bey, the number one pick, and Jeremy Grant for Dame?
Sadiq Bey, untouchable.
Wow.
Sorry. That's not happening. But you know what I mean? Like, if you are moving on from Dame, I want the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
I want the number two pick in this draft. And I want an unprotected or whatever, lightly protected future first from you, because you're going to be bad, even if you have Dame.
I will say, I do think that, and I hope this is an opportunity for the small market teams, the teams that aren't players in free agency. This guy's under contract for 4 years. He seems to me like the kind of player that genuinely just wants to win. I don't think he cares about living in a glamour city, etc. Portland's a great city, by the way. That's not an insult to Portland or many of the great NBA cities around America. Point being, this is where small markets, listen, this is your chance. The guy's under contract for 4 years. Put together a package. Because this is an opportunity the Clevelands, the Charlottes, the Detroits of the world rarely get.
So what if the Orlando Magic traded for Dame and then hired Terry Stotts? What would your what would your thoughts be there?
I would be upset because I think Penny Hardaway becoming the coach there would be so fun. That's awesome. I'm all for that. That seems like a really cool development. That would be pretty funny. I would just be happy the Magic don't still have 9 power forwards on the team, because theoretically they'd have to trade one or two of them in this move. But the Magic have been just the way station for NBA. Like, if you're between the height of 6'8", 6'10", you've probably played for the Orlando Magic at some point, out of position, playing small forward for them. Can I hit you with my on-the-spot, I want to see your reaction question of the week? That's what we're calling this segment.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, this is a two-parter, okay? Who would you rather have on your team for the next 5 years, and who is better right now? DeAndre Ayton or Bam Adebayo?
Okay, so I love this question, and I think, you know, it's really difficult for me to personally say anyone is better than Bam Adebayo at basketball, so I'm going to stick with, I think Bam is better than DeAndre Ayton, who, by the way, is, I think I'm going to be writing about him this week, potentially, and it's impossible to be more impressed with his postseason run. I mean, I tweeted over the weekend that he's the MVP of the conference finals.
I feel like I write about him every time I write something or off one of these games. He's been incredible.
Yeah.
Who would you rather have for the next 5 years, Ayton or Bam?
That's a spicy meatball right there. That's the
meme that was going around this weekend of the Italian soccer player just pleading with the ref with two Mamma Mia hands. That's the that's the Ayton Bam question.
This one This one's really interesting because, man, I don't want to step on.
Can I tell you why I'm asking it? Yeah, can I tell you why
please,
I'm asking
please,
it?
Please, 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 please.
I think the NBA game is three games right now. There's the regular season.
Okay.
There's the first two rounds of the playoffs. Then there's the last 6 minutes of the finals and conference finals. Players who succeed in the first two don't necessarily succeed in the last one. And I'm not saying Bam, we saw him succeed in the conference finals against your Boston Celtics, by the way, blocking Jason Tatum, dominating Daniel Theis in that game six. Having said
he's
that,
a former Celtic, but continue.
Having said that, has Bam ever had the offensive stretch that Ayton has had for the first three rounds of this playoffs? And listen, Bam's a great offensive player in terms of throwing the ball at the elbow, let him operate, etc. At the same time, I think he gets a lot of criticism for not being aggressive enough, not looking for a shot enough. Jimmy Butler has publicly said he needs to shoot more. Ayton, on the other hand, not having a single play called for him, and he's putting up 20-10s every night. I think it's an interesting question. And I think we are both just so impressed with how well Ayton has played.
So one of the really interesting things was after I tweeted just purely off emotion that Ayton was the MVP, I actually looked up the on-off numbers for the series, and they are dreadful for DeAndre Ayton, which, look, we're dealing with a small sample size and all that, and these games have been very competitive, and one of them was, the Clippers. It wasn't a blowout, but the Clippers kind of handled game three, I would say, especially when Ayton was on the floor. I think that Bam obviously offers a little bit more versatility on the defensive end, even though Ayton has just been phenomenal on that side of the ball. And Ayton's rebounding and just his physical presence. I mean, he's bringing rebounding back into style, frankly.
He is.
And showing the value of it, really. So
the value proposition you have to make here is, does Bam's defensive versatility outweigh the fact that I think Ayton is a little bit more disruptive offensively and on the glass? Because I think Bam, if you want to switch one through five, he is going to play better one-on-one defense against Steph Curry or Kevin Durant than Ayton is. But can Ayton give you 75% of that switchability while being so much more disruptive everywhere else? Because Ayton, in a way Bam does not, almost forces you to stay big, which is what we've seen the Clippers do with Zubac, right? They're being forced to stay big right now in a way that you don't have to with Bam. It's just very fascinating because, like I said, it's regular season versus the first two rounds of the playoffs versus the last 6 minutes of the finals or conference finals.
So one thing I've been thinking about, you mentioned correctly that Ayton is forcing the Clippers to stay big. I think if Kawhi Leonard was healthy,
Boardman
gets
true.
Paid, they would be small with Kawhi at the five or could whoever
you,
at the five.
Could you imagine if Anthony Davis never gets hurt? What's the conversation? Like, what would have happened to DeAndre Ayton? Like, the butterfly effect of that injury and what it's done for Ayton's career, frankly, the way people are talking about him now. I'm not saying that he wouldn't have succeeded in that series. He might have played really well, but the Lakers might have won anyway. And the conversation about DeAndre Ayton is completely different. I mean, maybe he's not getting the full max. I don't know. It's just, it's been a wild postseason for him in particular.
It's an interesting point. I think that the
if Suns... I'd asked you that question at the start of the season, we would have been laughing. It would have been like us slapping our
no
knees
question.
Laughing.
That's because we don't know anything. going back to just offense really quick. Look, I mean, you got to look at the situations. You got to look at who's around who. Ayton is a play finisher. Bam is able to finish plays and also initiate offense. And maybe Ayton gets to that level. I think he can at some point in his career. He's not a bad passer. Mm-hmm. He can shoot. He's probably a better shooter than Bam is right now, I would say.
He's looked more confident shooting those mid-range pull-ups than Bam did in the postseason. Ayton also has the benefit of playing with Chris Paul, kind of the ultimate
100%.
He's big running, man cheat code. Yeah.
He's running these high pick and rolls with Chris, who's the greatest pick and roll operator of all time. He's, you know, engineering these dribble handoffs with Devin Booker that really stretch the defense, and then hard rolling. So, yeah, like Ayton's just kind of in a perfect situation, and mm-hmm. This is not meant to take anything away from him because he's going to get the max. He deserves the max. And he's been absolutely phenomenal in the playoffs. And he's filled his role, which, by the way, is not something that every young player would do. So you have to give him credit. I think I would still go with Bam in for both of the questions, though, because I just think it's a little easier to, if I have Bam as my foundation, it's a little easier for me to know what I can and can't put around him. And I just have more options, I should say, in what I can and can't put around him than with Ayton. So that's probably by the slimmest of margins the direction I would go in.
Cool.
How about you? What's your answer?
Oh, shoot. This was me putting you on the spot.
Oh, geez.
I was supposed to go the other way around. I think I'm with you. I'm still going Bam just because I want to see a longer, more sustained version of the Ayton we're seeing. I mean, this is someone who I think early in the season in the fourth quarters, it was like, is this guy going to play in the fourth quarter of a playoff game? So I just want to see more sustained play of this from Ayton before I'm willing to commit. But I think he's the fact that it's a conversation now, I think is a testament to how well he's played during the playoffs.
Right. And we should also say that the Clippers, I tweeted this out over the weekend, the Clippers are +3 in this series, heading into tonight's game 5. And I guess that just means that these games have been very competitive.
Of course.
Lot of them could go either way, honestly. So
I don't think LA's out of it.
No question. And I didn't want to talk too much about that series in this episode just because game 5 is tonight, so it would be a little bit dated. But I'm with you. I think that the Clippers can totally come back and win this series. And
when they lose by 50 tonight, we'll just have to cut out the end of this podcast.
Yes, of course. Yes, then we do not get to answer your mystery question then. Rohan, I think that does it for today's episode. I want to once again thank all of our wonderful listeners from all over the globe for sending in emails. Keep sending them in to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Rohan, you and I will be back next week. We will be recording on Monday, even though that is our Independence Day, or I guess the day after Independence Day, but we will still be recording. Chris and I will be back later this week on Thursday. Until then, everyone, please stay safe. Everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA playoffs.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.